Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation and technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Are you working? What kind of work do you do?
This is the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Touchdown! 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 Georgia!
Now, here are your hosts, two-time All-American punter, Drew Butler.
Drew Butler, leader in the country in punts 49+. See if he booms this one. He does. Wow!
And Rose Bowl, Sugar Bowl, and SEC championship-winning quarterback, Jake Fromm.
Lead blicker to get the night started. Downfield looking for Godwin into his hands. And guess which door?
Now, with the latest from around the SEC and the world of college football, it's the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Dogs are winners. A national championship for a new generation of Bulldogs.
Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been lame. Waiting for your next mistake. I put in work and watch my status escalate.
Your cornballs get stolen.
Welcome in. Running my plan. I'm the better man. Crazy to the Punt and Pass Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler, usually join alongside my co-host, Jake Fromm. Jake's a little busy right now. He'll be back next week to recap what is coming up. That's week one of the college football season. We have tons to discuss. We have tons to recap, as well as week zero was last weekend. And we have a very, very special guest on this episode of Punt and Pass. None other than my very close friend, Alabama great, former quarterback, used to be in the broadcast booth for 5 years for the Alabama Crimson Tide, John Parker Wilson. John Parker, thanks so much for joining us, man. How are you?
Drew, always good to be with you, man. I had, it's been a great day so far. I had a great lunch, knocked out some shepherd's pie, okay. And now we're here, ready to go.
Absolutely. Follow us on social media at Punt and Pass on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Drew Butler. He is at JP Wilson 14. This episode of Punt and Pass is presented to you by Salomon Brothers Jewelers. That's right. The family owned and operated since 1982, largest diamond and jewelry inventory in the Southeast, jewelry store that you need to check out. They have two awesome locations for you in Atlanta. One is in Alpharetta, just past the Avalon. The other is in Buckhead, 17th floor, Tower Place. The best thing about Salomon Brothers is they have the lowest prices on the highest quality jewelry and diamonds guaranteed. And the store is for anyone with any budget. So if you want to get ahead of the curve and get your significant other something special before you go away seemingly every weekend now that college football is starting, head on over to Salomon Brothers. Mention Punt and Pass or myself or Jake. You can get 10% off your jewelry purchase. Check them out on social media at Salomon Brothers, SalomonBrothers.com. All right, JP, we have a ton to talk about. A ton. First off, did you watch any of the week zero football last weekend? A little amuse-bouche for what is coming up this weekend with Labor Day?
You know, a little bit. It was more it was more a little background noise.
Yeah.
You know, not some great matchups. Fell asleep watching Vandy in Hawaii. know, they had a long rain delay, so a little bit past my bedtime there at the end. But, you know, it's back. We got football back. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the season. I think it's going to be fun. But, you know, it's kind of like preseason football in NFL. You don't really watch it unless, yeah. I guess, if you're diehard, if you're pulling for the Falcons, you want to see who the backups are, who's going to be out there in some mop-up duty. But, yeah, I didn't spend a lot of time. I'm just geared up. I'm dialing up this weekend, Drew.
Yeah, dude, this weekend's going to be so much fun. We have college football action Thursday night, Friday night, all day Saturday, Sunday night, and, of course, Monday night as well. It's one of my favorite weekends of the year. It kind of signifies the changing of the guard, summer turning into fall. NFL's coming up next weekend, which is going to be awesome. So this is it, man. This is it. And you made some news earlier in the week or maybe later last week, which made me reach out to you. And then I had to pull your teeth and I said, come on, punt and pass. And you were like, I don't know. And I said, John Parker, please, we're close friends. And you're like, I don't know. You know, David Spade said it best. He has a great podcast. And he says, podcast interview requests are like the jury duty of Hollywood. And I think that's so true. You just don't want to do it. But thank you so much. The news you broke was that after five very successful years as the color analyst on the Alabama Crimson Tide Sports Network next to Eli Gold, you're calling it quits. You're hanging up the microphone. 5 years, one national championship, one SEC championship. Congratulations, man. Your weekends are now free.
They are free. They are free. And first off, I think I'm actually positive that anytime Drew Butler calls, we're coming on the pod.
Okay. That's good to know.
It is a good analogy, though. You know, everybody's got a podcast, or not everybody. There's a lot of podcasts out there, a lot of podcast requests. I mean, I could spend all day, every day doing podcasts, but you got one of the best ones, so I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you. We share a lot of history. People may or may not know about it. Going back to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
No doubt.
Yeah, tons of very good mutual friends. So I always appreciate
it. Hey, you know, and that was the Shepherd's Pie reference there for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I don't know if you recall, but, you know, me, I was freshly married when I moved up to Pittsburgh.
Freshly married.
Like a weekend. Like we got married. Actually, I came and did my physical, signed the contract, everything. I got cut by the Jaguars, flew up there the week of my wedding. So got it done, got back, got married, went on our honeymoon, and then packed up the car and drove to Pittsburgh. So that was some formative times in our years right there, Drew.
It really was. Very formative.
It was that was 10, 12 years ago now. So
golly. It's a long time ago.
Times have changed since we were hanging out on Carson Street. Is it Carson Street?
That was it, dude. My pad was right above Carson Street, and yours is a little up the hill. I remember that. A lot of golf, a lot of cold beverages, a lot of fun.
It was great. It was great. But yeah, I did have to hang up the mic, right? So it was five great years. I really loved being a part of the program and coming back to the program, right? Of being gone for so long and then getting to have a completely different view. And you've done radio, you know, it's different. It's just like you play, and then when you're playing, you never in a million years think you're going to be up there calling the game and talking about it and being a part of it in a different, completely different way. But, you know, where I'm at right now is I've got two boys that are about to turn seven, about to turn four. So it was it's bittersweet. It was a big time commitment. I love being a part of it. I'm going to stay a part of Alabama football. But now, you know, I grew up going to games with my dad, going to games with my family. My brother, my mom, and I'm looking forward to creating those memories with my boys, which is, you know, when you're working on Saturdays, that's not something you have the ability to do. So we're geared up, dialed in for the season, and I'll be, you know, watching like a regular fan now.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And I know you're a great dad. You got a great family, and you can't replace those memories. So it's awesome in their formative years to go back, having been a part of the program as a great player, but then on the media side as well, and now getting to show them what Saturdays in Tuscaloosa are all about. And you got to work with an all-time legend in Eli Gold. And it sounds like he's doing better, I hope. You know, I know he's been battling some health issues in the past couple of years. But he's gearing up for yet another season in the booth. What was it like working with Eli? And do you have some specific memories that you might be able to put on the top of your memory bank?
Yeah. So Eli, I think this will be his 36th, maybe 37th year of being the voice of the Crimson Tide. So
done it all, seen it all.
I mean, honestly have seen it, have seen everything. I've seen a lot of national championships. I've seen some bad years when we were wondering out, you know, trying to figure out if what, you know, what in the world was going to happen. So he's been great. He's been amazing. You know, I think, you know, he is healthy. He's back. He's going to be back doing the home games this year. So, you know, still building his strength. Went through a lot last year, missed last year football season, but he'll be back this year. So just kind of picking up where he left off. I'm sure it's like riding a bike after doing something for that long, for, you know, for however many games he has been a part of. It'll just be like second nature for, he probably dreams about like calling games and could just get into it like it's nothing.
What's his tagline? Touchdown Alabama. Is that what he says?
That's it. Yeah, so a couple of memories from doing the radio. And look, like I said, I grew up in Alabama fam. Like we would listen to the radio as the TV play. It was a lot easier back in the day than it is now. Very hard to sync it up and get, you know, push pause and everything else. So Kenny Stabler was doing it when I was growing up. And Kenny Stabler is obviously the snake, the man. Dude, he was the
legend.
He was a color radio guy. So when they asked me to do it, I was like, Kenny Stabler did this. This is, yes, I'm in.
I never knew that.
Yeah, Snake did it for years.
That's awesome.
He was awesome, you know, had his own spin on it, was fantastic. But my first game, so I'm doing a radio interview in Birmingham on Friday mornings. I do it every Friday morning. And I'm down in, we're playing Louisville in Orlando. And one of the guys asked, he goes, man, what happens if your voice goes out? Like, are you going to be, like, you've never talked this long? I was like, I don't know. Like, I guess I'll just figure it out. So the next day, I think it was mental. I think it was like I had psyched myself out like an hour before the game. I'm like, can't breathe. I'm drinking like hot tea before the game, trying to figure out what's going on. I think I was just so nervous of going out there and having to talk for so long with something that I've never done it before. I mean, go out there, you're talking to a lot of people. There's a lot of people that listen to, you know, big time SEC football games. So I think I was more nervous on having to actually talk, and there's no backup, right? There's no backup color guy in the booth. There's a backup quarterback. If you get hurt, that's fine. But it was, you know, I got through it. I'm sure it was terrible. But I got probably more nervous doing that than I ever did playing a football game.
That's too funny. Yeah, you probably did psych yourself out. And you're right. It's like, it's totally different to be able to prepare for that back and forth. There's no set time for how long the game can go. It might go in overtime. Hey, the conditions are different. Some will have AC or heaters if it's colder. Some will be open air or closed. So look, you battle the elements, and that's what you do, JP. You're a warrior.
And the day before, he's like, hey, If there's a rain delay, like we saw last week against Vandy, right? He's like, if there's a rain delay, we don't cut to the studio. We are the studio. So if it goes 2, 3, 4 hours, like, we're in this. So
figure it out.
Better have some stuff to talk about. Like, be prepared, be ready to go. You got to figure it out.
That's too funny. Any specific games that jump out where you say, man, that was awesome. I'll always remember that. Or maybe some unexpected happenings that you'll never forget.
Okay. So I think the biggest game was, you know, the national championship when we won. I think that's a big game.
Like, that's when y'all blew out Ohio State.
Ohio State, blew them out
in San Francisco.
It was in Miami.
Miami, that's right. The COVID year.
San Francisco was Clemson. Did not fare too well against them.
Remember that.
So that was probably the best game. And then the game I remember the biggest was Eli actually got COVID. It was during the COVID year. Same year. And so he got COVID. We didn't want to travel the team and like expose the team to COVID, right? So we had to call the game from Bryant-Denny Stadium. We were playing Arkansas on the road.
Really?
Team was in Fayetteville. We're calling the game from Bryant-Denny Stadium. Chris Stewart has to fill in, and we had to call the game from the press box. So they're in our normal press box. And then I'm actually in the athletic director's press box. We can't see each other, never worked with them before. And we're calling the game off the ESPN feed. We're watching normal TV calling the game.
And everybody's separate.
Everybody separate.
That's bizarre.
He was in one room. The producer engineer was in a different room, and I was in my room. And we were all separate, calling it off, just a normal TV like you'd see at home. Never crazy done it times. Before. Probably will never do it again. But, yeah, it was crazy.
All right, one game I do have to ask you about, and then we'll get into kind of previewing the season. You and I had a couple of beverages the night before the national championship game in Indianapolis. Remember when we saw each other at Capitol Grill? That was fun. Yes. That game now is kind of in lore for Georgia. The TV call with Chris Fowler and the pick six, the Georgia broadcasting booth literally going wild. You can hear people screaming in the background because when Georgia won that game, that huge weight was lifted off the shoulders of all Georgia Bulldogs fans. You guys are sitting in that booth. The game's kind of slipping away. It was really back and forth. And then when that pick six happens, what do? You're just like, well, there it is.
I don't know. I mean,
I can honestly say I've never heard your call. I've never heard your call. I think I heard Eli. Eli kind of took it over in that moment, didn't he? Or was it Chris Stewart?
No, that was it was definitely Eli then. And I don't know. Like, we didn't lose a lot of games, so it's kind of like we didn't know what to do. I mean, it's kind of like you're trying to inform everybody what you're talking about or what you're seeing because there are people driving down the road that can't.
Yeah.
You can't be witness to it. So, you try to be humble. You try to, like, obviously, Georgia played a great game. Obviously, Alabama had a lot of people hurt in that game. A couple of receivers went down. I think our two starting cornerbacks were out.
Is that right? I forget that.
I think all those happened. But Capitol Grill was probably the best part of the week.
No, you bring up a great point, though. You know, Alabama, not only did they not lose a lot of games throughout your entire five-year tenure, but specifically in games like that, Alabama always won and Georgia always found a way to lose. So you're kind of shocked in that moment, I guess, when you're sitting there on your side.
Well, I mean, the game did start running away from us, right? And it the pick six, and then I think there's another touchdown after that, wasn't there?
No, not after the pick six, but it was the AD Mitchell bomb, right? And then later in the game, the pick six sealed it. That's right. Georgia was up by eight, and then the pick six happened.
Yeah. So at that point, you know, it becomes like any other thing. Like,
yeah,
had a great season. Obviously, we didn't finish so we want to. Had a lot of guys hurt.
Did you?
We did. Jameson Williams got hurt. I think.
Oh, believe me. I'm always reminded by that. My wife went to Alabama. She says
that's right. We're not making excuses, but you know, look, I think Georgia's obviously put themselves in a position to be, obviously at the top of college football right now in the conversation every year. So it's a good new rivalry, I think. Right? It wasn't really a rivalry before, and now it seems like we're facing each other every year in big games, and it's. You know, that's pretty fun. It's pretty fun to be a part of the SEC, I think.
No doubt. Well, congrats on an awesome career in the booth alongside Eli Gold. Like I said, five seasons, a national championship, an SEC championship. You got some rings as well. And you're an all-time great. So you're going to continue to have great times, continue to be a part of the program, now be in Tuscaloosa, a part of game day with your family. So that's awesome. Let's go ahead and look towards 2023. And it's interesting because I feel like Alabama has really taken over some of the media spotlight. And I want to kind of take you back to SEC media days in the middle of July. What I was hearing from a lot of the talking heads that we follow on SEC Network, on ESPN, other people who cover the SEC around social media was a lot of love for LSU. Jaden Daniels returning at quarterback. They beat Alabama a year ago. Brian Kelly's heading into his second year. Historically, coaches going into their second years at SEC schools find a lot of respect. And then there was just tons of questions around Alabama specifically. Who's going to be the quarterback? New coordinators again this year. Could this be deemed a rebuilding year after two of the top three NFL draft picks were from Alabama in Bryce Young and Will Anderson? But now, a week before the season starts, you see Herb Street and McAfee and guys on ESPN saying Alabama's going to win the SEC. Alabama's going to win the national championship. I saw Josh Pate from CBS Sports say, hey, he thinks Alabama's going to win the SEC as well. I want to ask you, because you're close to the program, Is the demise of Alabama being greatly exaggerated? Are we putting too much impotence on new coordinators, which it seems like Nick Saban has to deal with every single year? Are the questions around the quarterback position as legit as some make it out to be? And what's your overall thought? Do you think people are doubting Alabama, or do you think that they're kind of being expected or predicted to be right where they are?
No, I think there's obviously a lot of time is spent during the offseason on projecting and forecasting who's going to be what, who's going to be where. Georgia's won two of the last two national championships, so I don't know when the last time anybody's won three in a row, but obviously that's going to be tough to do. So, you know, Alabama losing two games last year, I think, you know, there are some question marks or there's some unknowns, I think is a better word than question marks for Alabama coming to the season. Two new coordinators, I don't think that's a problem at all. I think Coach Saban has dealt with this time and time and time again. It's like, you know, every couple of years we have a complete changeover in staff. We have a complete changeover in players. And I think he has found a way to, you know, make it the easiest on the players. Because I remember, you know, when we were playing, the thing was, okay, you get a new coordinator come in. And I had three coordinators when I was playing. New guy comes in, he brings his playbook. His playbook comes in, and now you have to learn. It was trips right, now it's trio right, and now Z motion is called Z. Like, the players have to learn a completely new playbook. Well, over Coach Saban figuring out, like, the playbook stays the same. Obviously, the coordinators are going to have their tweaks and changes and implement what they want to, but the hardest thing for players is the language. It's speaking what it is. It's calling the plays, getting them out, knowing what your checks are. So that's become easier. You know, Kevin Steele, the defensive coordinator coming in, second stint with Coach Saban. He was there. He was the defense coordinator for Saban's first year back in 2007. So they've got a lot of familiarity with each other. He knows what to expect. He knows what Coach Saban's expecting. He knows what it's going to take. He's been super successful since he left Alabama. So I think Kevin Steele's a huge positive because he's been there. He's been successful. He's gone off and done it. Now he knows it. He knows what to think and knows everything. He's going to know the schedule and everything. And I think Tommy Rees has been, from what I've heard, from what I've seen, has been pretty amazing at Alabama so far. I know he's a young guy, but you hear, you know, the older coaches, you hear Kevin Steele talk about him, Coach Saban, like he's got a good thought process, a good mentality about the game, obviously played quarterback, which I think at the end of the day is a pretty big bonus.
Yeah.
Especially being in the quarterback room of having somebody that you can connect with pretty easily, that played it, that knows what it takes, you know, that knows the pressure that it is playing at a big time school, that's going to be on you from, you know, students, family, fans, everything. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. So he's not that far removed from what these guys are going through.
Yeah.
And then you got three or four quarterbacks right now that are you know, trying to win the starting spot. And, you know, he's been there. So I think it's a big plus there. You know, obviously Alabama, the big question's quarterback. Who's going to be the quarterback? Jalen Milroe got a start last year when Bryce Young got hurt. He went down against Arkansas, came back, started the next week, won the game. Ty Simpson, huge recruit, coming out of high school. Buckner transfers in from Notre Dame. And then you got a freshman, Eli Longren, that, you know, had a great spring and has continued to make waves during training camp. So, you know, it's different. It's different this year than past years. Because you look at the schedule this week, right? Usually Alabama's playing Texas the first week. Georgia's playing. Who do y'all have in your first big game?
I mean, we played Oregon last year, but this year we were supposed to open with Oklahoma, and the SEC nixed that when Oklahoma and Texas decided to come to the SEC next season. So Georgia's schedule is UT Martin, then Ball State, then South Carolina, than UAB, dude. I mean, it is a cupcake schedule the first 4 weeks of the season.
Well, we play Texas second week. That's going to be tough. But, you know, usually it's the big games that first week. So I think this is kind of a warm-up game, you know, for the bigger schools to kind of figure out who you are, play another opponent because, you know, you go get the same guys over and over and over in practice. You don't know really what you have. So I don't think we're going to learn a lot this first week.
Yeah.
We'll probably learn some inefficiencies in teams that are not where they need to be. But, you know, everybody always says you learn the most from week one to week two. I think Alabama will go through this game, still trying to figure out who their quarterback is. And then, you know, hopefully have somebody by the end of the week too. But this isn't unprecedented for Saban. No. I think it was 2015. Blake Barnett started the first game. We played in Dallas.
That's a deep cut right there. Blake Barnett.
And then Jalen Hurts comes in and finishes the games. And I think we're playing Michigan. So I think you try to put the best guy out there, but you don't really know what you have. So you got to go out there and play somebody to figure it out.
Yeah, Alabama opening up home against Middle Tennessee State this weekend, gearing up for the huge Week 2 game against Texas. We're going to touch on that in just a second. Let me say a couple of things. First off, like you said, this is not unfamiliar territory for Nick Saban. Second off, people are making a huge deal about Tommy Rees like being an unproven offensive coordinator. What do you think Nick Saban is going to do? Just go hire some slappy with a lot of question marks? Like, he obviously brought the guy in, vetted him, talked to plenty of people to get some referrals, and then said, okay, this is the right guy for me, Nick Saban, the greatest college football coach of all time. So, like, I have trust in Nick Saban making the decision that Tommy Rees is the right guy. And then third off, the continued question marks around the quarterback position. It's not like these guys suck. They're all very highly rated recruits. Jalen Milroe has some experience as well. Tyler Buckner transferring in from Notre Dame, where Tommy Rees, the offensive coordinator, came from. And then, like you said, Lonergan and Ty Simpson, like these guys can all spin it. They just need to take the reins. Saban had a great quote yesterday. I don't know if you saw it, but he said, I need the quarterbacks to stop looking at me to make a decision. You need to go out there and just make the decision for me. Hey, Jalen's doing great. He's going to be our guy. And when you do play a team like Middle Tennessee State, surely a lot of these guys are going to get playing time. But what you find out is situational football, 4-minute offense before the half, 2-minute drill late in the game. Who's going to do and make a play on a 3rd and 10, or who's going to call the offense right to keep us on schedule and move the chains? Like, that's what you find out against these lesser teams. And then, of course, special teams and defense as well. But somebody's got to just make the decision for Nick Saban. And I think once they put that stamp of approval on him, it's off to the races. Alabama's got tons of talent. I'm not buying this notion that it's a rebuilding year for the Crimson Tide. I'm really not.
No, I don't either. I think we've got 4 capable guys, right? And I think it'll probably be different week 1 than week 10. I think things will continue to change and evolve. But yeah, these guys are they're all great quarterbacks. Like, you go to practice and you watch them, they can all spin it. They can all, make the right reads. I think what you find out in the game, though, is who can handle it. Yeah. Who can handle the pressure? Because I don't care if you're playing Middle Tennessee State.
You're 100% right.
Some junior college, like, you go out there, there's 100,000 people in the stands. You're on national TV. Like, it exposes a lot of strengths and exposes a lot of weaknesses. And I think this is where they take the bull by the horns and they win the team, right? Because I think he said a lot too, Coach Saban has, that, hey, I don't pick the team. I don't pick the quarterback. The team picks him. Well, because the guys in practice, they see who's running 2-minute drill.
No
doubt. Who's scoring them. Third long, who's scoring them, what they're doing, in every kind of situation. And the guys want to win. That's all you care about as football players, winning a football game. So who's going to give this the best chance to do it? I don't know. And I don't think anybody knows that right now. I don't think Coach Saban knows it. But, you know, we go out there and we got to figure it out pretty quick, because I think Texas is going to be a pretty good team coming into Tuscaloosa week 2.
Is there anything out of the ordinary before we kind of dot around the SEC and get off Alabama? Is there anything out of the ordinary that Alabama is dealing with heading into this 2023 season? What worries me is when I see Nick Saban like happier than a pig in shit in front of the media. I'm like, that does not give me a warm, cuddly feeling inside when he's smiling and he's like, I got you right where I want you.
Well, I think because, you know, there's question of quarterback, right? Or who's going to be the guy. But there's a lot of strengths around him.
Yeah.
I think your offensive line is going to be much improved from years past, going back to really the 2020 season, when we did win the national championship, probably that type of caliber offensive line. Defense is deep. We do lose Will Anderson and some pretty big guys. But I think our secondary, we got 7 or 8 guys that I think are going to be contributors, and they could all possibly be starters. So super deep in the secondary. You know, you got some production coming back at wide receiver. You get a transfer in at tight end. And then we will play 4 running backs. There will be 4 running backs played that are going to rotate in. You got a true freshman there from from where we used to, or where I used to be up at Buford, Justice Haynes. So I think there's so many strengths around whatever quarterback's going to be that you do have confidence as an Alabama fan going into this game.
Yeah, no question about it. It's going to be a fascinating year, and week two is going to be really exciting. We're going to get to that in just one second. But first, I do want to mention our big watch of the week. That's right. The Solomon Brothers segment, big watch of the week, is back. Why is it called Big Watch of the Week? Because Solomon Brothers Jewelers is definitely a place you want to take your significant other. But if you just closed a huge deal like John Parker does every other week, take yourself to Solomon Brothers and get you a fine timepiece. That's right. They have an unbelievable selection. You can hit them up at either location. Alpharetta just past the Avalon. Buckhead, 17th floor, Tower Place. This weekend's Big Watch of the Week, it's got to be that Sunday night game. Top 10 matchup, number 5 LSU against number 8 Florida State. Florida State is a 2.5-point underdog. This is a neutral game in Orlando, Florida. Remember, this game a year ago came down to a blocked extra point. That game was in New Orleans. Both of these teams, really high expectations. Your Solomon Brothers Big Watch of the Week, Sunday night, 7:30 p.m. ABC. Top 10 matchup, LSU against Florida State in Orlando. I like Florida State with the points. That's what I think.
No, I see. I don't know, Carl. I think I'm just an SEC homer. Like, it's really hard for me to pick against the SEC.
I know.
And, you know, I did go down to LSU last year, saw them beat us. And I know they got Jake Daniels coming back. They got the wide receiver coming back, Neighbors.
That Harold Perkins guy's a freak, total game wrecker.
Yeah, and I think, you know, an LSU team with Brian Kelly in the second year, I remember Coach Saban in his second year, forget what Kirby did. I mean, like you said earlier, like, this is kind of when you're like,
Kirby's second year is when they lost second and 26, then with the national championship.
Yeah, winning the national championship in your second year. You know, our second year with Saban, we lost in the SEC championship. We were 6-6 the season before. So
yeah,
this is kind of when you're like, you got to figure it out. You got all your people in place. Like, you know where the equipment room is now. Like, where the training day. Like, okay, let's play some ball now. So, I don't know. I think LSU does have a lot of momentum coming out of last year. You get your quarterback back, and you get some big play guys on offense. So, I think LSU will win it. I think, but at the same time, for LSU, for Florida State, I mean, this is kind of like an inflection point early on in the season and where they're going to go. Because there's a huge wall to climb after this if you lose. So I'm not saying this is like do or die week one, but you, and the same thing for Alabama, for Texas, for anybody else playing, you know, a top 10, top 20 matchup, you want to go out and win this game. And I think even more so for LSU, just kind of, you know, still not searching for an identity, but year two of a new coach, like you want to go out and prove a point early.
Yeah, no question about it. Another guy who's going into year two, or is it year three for Steve Sarkisian at Texas?
I think it's two.
Okay. So Chris Marler from Saturday Down South, who I love, he was on the podcast last week. He's a huge, unabashed Alabama fan. He said he thinks Alabama's going to lose to Texas by 10-plus points inside Bryant Denny. I'm like, dude, what is going on? Again, I hear a lot of Alabama love. I hear a lot of Alabama hate. I think Alabama wins against Texas in Bryant-Denny Stadium. You would assume College Game Day is going to be there. I think it's a night game, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Like, dude, that atmosphere is going to be the lion's den. This is the last question I'll ask you about Alabama specifically. I don't want people to start turning off the podcast because we've been showing the Tide a lot of love here, but we do have a special guest. Like, I think that's crazy when people say, oh, yeah, Quinn Ewers, Steve Sarkisian, they're just going to waltz into Bryant-Denny and win by 10-plus. I mean, when's the last time that's happened?
That's a good question. In Bryant-Denny Stadium, I don't know. We'd have to do a quick chat.
10-plus points.
10-plus points is a lot. I'll go back to, like, okay, there's a lot of people making predictions. It's really easy to make bold predictions right now at the beginning of the season when nothing's happened. I think Ewers is great. I think he's a great quarterback. Steve Sarkisian, seen him firsthand. He was coordinator at Alabama for a couple years. I think he is a great coach. I think he is a great game planner. I think he knows how to put his guys in really good situations to be successful. Moving around, you know, motion shifts, getting people in the right position on the field. So I do have a lot, ton of respect for Steve Sarkisian. But I think you're playing a big matchup on the road. It is a night game. You know, but that being said, Texas was winning, I think, last year in the third quarter.
Yeah, it was a great game.
It was a great game after, you know, Ewers got knocked out. So does he stay in the game? Does it look different if he's in the game versus not? I think Alabama's a different team than they were last year. You know, early on the season, Alabama had a ton of penalties. We had like 20 penalties a game, it felt like. It was definitely double digits. So it will be more mature, and I think we'll just have some better athletes this year. So I don't know, 10 plus points. I think
that's would, dude, that's crazy. That's I'd crazy
take
points, talk.
I would take
Hell yeah.
them, give them to me all day right now. So
I just found I agree with you. I think Alabama's going to win the game. I just found this article. It's from September 2021, Tony Barnhart. So a couple years old. Since 2008, Alabama is 84-5 at home. Okay. Think about the Johnny Manziel loss. They lost by 6. Think about the Joe Burrow loss. They lost by like 4. They don't get blown out at home. That's not going to happen. So, look, I'm sure I'm missing some statistic there, but I agree with you. Like, that atmosphere. Look, I know the game was great last year. I'm fired up for that game. If I had to guess, that'd be our Solomon Brothers big watch of the week for week two, but you'll have to come back and check in on that. All right, I teased that you were going to be on the podcast last night. And a lot of people wanted to know about the similarities between Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. Obviously, you have a ton of familiarity with Kirby Smart as well. Any personal experiences you can kind of expand upon that our audience would love to hear? Obviously, Nick Saban very familiar with the kind of air that Kirby is in right now. Back-to-back national champs, going for a three-peat, setting those expectations, really owning the communication to his team, to the media. Any surprises that Kirby's found the success that he has at Georgia?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, he was there on staff the first year with Saban. I think he was defense coordinator the second year. And then he was, you know, obviously the coordinator for many years. I'm not surprised by it at all. I think he's built an amazing, strong program, right? And I have heard him talk to the media a lot this year. And I think, you know, Coach Saban does it also where you're speaking to your players through the media because – especially nowadays with Twitter and everything else, like guys are on there, they're hearing what your coach saying. So I think it's just reinforcing what he's probably the same things, not word for word, but close to what he's telling them during the team meeting. Like, hey, last year, this year is independent of last year. Doesn't matter what you did. Those guys are gone. Even if you were here, like this is a new team, this is a new look. And, you know, it's so much harder to stay on top. He's been able to do it 2 years in a row now, you know, and I don't care who picks. Before the season, you know, I think Georgia's favorite right now in Vegas to win it all. So you got to respect what Kirby's doing. The guy's got a heck of a program, keeps getting, you know, the top recruits. And I really don't like when people, you know, knock on Alabama or knock on Georgia. Well, they just got the best recruits. Well, they do get the best recruits because of the best programs, yes. But they also develop them really, really well. You know, you look at, you know, whether it's a true freshman playing, making the leap from high school to college football, and if you're a true freshman playing, like that's unbelievable that you're that good, and you're, yeah. I think you're going to have good enough coaches to do that, especially at a place like Alabama, Georgia, where there's really good guys in front of you. There are 4- and 5-star guys in front of you. So I think we'll probably have a couple of true freshmen playing for Alabama. I know Georgia probably will also, but, you know, there's staying power right now, and Alabama's been there, and now Georgia's just right there also.
What was it like when Saban took over the program at Alabama? Because you were the quarterback during that time. I don't want to date you or age you, but you already did that to us both when you mentioned that we were with the Steelers 11 years ago. God, that's a long time ago. Yeah, 10. Yeah. I don't want to go there. What was that like? I mean, was it a total overhaul from a leadership standpoint? Was it shocking? I don't know if you've watched Swamp Kings on Netflix, where like Urban Meyer came in and completely flipped the Florida program upside down and the guys were just totally shocked. Walk us through that. And how do you withstand that when you're Saban and you come in with that hard-nosed mentality and gain the trust of your players?
Yeah, I think it was kind of a flip everything around. You know, when he came in, we were coming off probation, right? So we were on probation for a few years.
That's right.
Coach Shula came in. You remember Mike Price was fired in like June, May or June. It was after training camp. So for him to come in and with limited scholarships. You know, we had 10 or 15, I can't remember how many scholarships, to kind of keep our program where it was at. But when Saban came in, the year before, we were 6-6. We lost in the Independence Bowl. So I think he brought kind of the college mentality back to Alabama. Obviously, Shula spent a lot of time in the NFL. Kind of brought it back where, hey, you're 18 to 22 year old kids. You need to be told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And that's what he did. I mean, it was like, okay, 6 o'clock you wake up, 6:05 you brush your teeth, 6:30 we eat breakfast, 7 o'clock you know, like it wasn't that disciplined, but that was kind of the mentality. It was like, hey, he had the blueprint, and this is I think where all the players brought in. He had won national championship at LSU. He had the blueprint. It's like, this guy knows what he's doing. If everybody buys in, we've got guys that want to be here. Yeah. We were on probation, so everybody on our team was basically from the Panhandle or Alabama. So we had guys that wanted to be there. And then in the second year, we got some really good recruits. Julio came in, Mark Ingram, Dante Hightower. So that's
some dogs.
He was able to take like what we had and some guys that really wanted to be there with some like studs that are still playing in the NFL. And that's what turned around. So yeah, it was hard. Coach Cochran, who's on staff there at Georgia now, he still gives me a hug every time I see him. He's like, man, we were on y'all that first year. Like Matt, we call it fourth quarter program. I don't know what Georgia calls, but he was like, hey, we were all over y'all. And you just kind of, you had to figure it out. You had another choice.
Yeah. You know, I think whenever I get asked about, and I'm sure you get asked a ton, having been at Alabama on the broadcast staff for so long, you know, when a dad or when a high school coach wants you to come talk to the team or, hey, will you talk to this kid? I always say, you know, and it took me a year or two to figure it out. When you first get to college, everything is planned out for you. And there's like this complex between, do I want to listen to everybody telling me what to do, to brush my teeth, to make my bed, to show up, to study? Or at some point you just be like, you know what? I don't need you. But there comes that inflection point where you're like, they're doing this because they want everybody to succeed and win. And once you buy in, which now a guy like Saban, when he recruits, it's like, oh yeah, well, if you want to come here, you do this, you'll become an All-American. You'll be a high draft pick. You're going to make a ton of money. You'll leave with rings. Like that's the program. Kirby's doing the same thing right now. You buy in while you're getting recruited. And then once you're there, you want to be a part of it, which is extremely powerful. And from like an organizational standpoint, look, it's no secret. Nick Saban's had tons of assistants get head coaching gigs, but Kirby's been the one to take it, take down Saban, reach that kind of superiority. And I think the number one thing that Kirby has on Saban, which pays in the recruiting trail and it pays in the day-to-day and it pays really in the success right now, is something that nobody can buy. And that's time. He's just younger. Like, I think that's it. And that's not a knock on Saban whatsoever, but seems like Kirby's in this thing for the long haul. He's found the secret sauce, and it's pretty good time to be a Georgia Bulldog right now.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that is, like a lot of people said about Saban, but, you know, he's obviously so super active.
Like, oh, man.
He gets
and they're both, like, they're both so smart, too. Nick Saban and Kirby Smart are brilliant people.
Calculated, brilliant. They're thinkers. They think a lot. They take outside advice, right? I don't know about Georgia, but like we had a speaker come in every night during training camp.
Yeah.
And Coach Saban's gonna be in the front row, like taking notes. Like a couple years ago, we had Kobe or whoever it is. It's like, hey, I think it's like successful people in anything you do, whatever industry or business you're in. Like,
hey, hell, he brought Pete Rose in this year.
Pete Rose, baby, let's go,
Charlie Hustle.
I can get some hits.
I know, dude.
You get some hits. But, like, you get to constantly be learning and improving yourself, and I think he's no different. You know, I think Coach Saban, however long he's going to be there, which I think will be some more time, you know, we've had, like, $1.5 billion right now since he's been there in NFL salaries. Like, dude. So to your point of, like, come in, let me teach you, let me add value for yourself, and whether you're successful in football, you can make a lot of money doing this or not, you can go into wealth management like me and have the fundamentals, right? The discipline, the process to be able to be successful in whatever you do. And I think that's impactful whether you're a walk-on or whether you're a first round draft.
Huge. Yeah. There's just no doubt about it. 100%. how's everything going in the wealth management business? You want free advertising right here. Where can people reach out to you?
Well, you know, we've got a compliance department. I know we had a compliance department in college. Yeah. Ours is
fierce. Here, I'll give them a great advertisement. John Parker Wilson, buy low, sell high. There you go.
I've got no comment, Drew. I've got no comment.
I love it. Yes or no, Georgia will three-peat this year?
I think it's a good question. I'm going to be a politician right now.
It is a good question.
I think it's hard. I think human nature sets in. I think at the same time, we've got really good players coming back, right? You've got a great coach and you've got a great schedule. I think, there'll be a meeting, right? Whether it's Alabama or whether it's LSU or whoever else. Like, I definitely see Georgia getting in from the East. But it's a long season. You know, there's injuries that happen. There's a lot of things that happen. So, you kind of find out your character, your who you are as a team throughout the course of the season. But I think it sets up really well for Georgia. I think it, I think they've got it. They've got a good shot, just like, you know, a few other teams, but it is pretty top heavy right now. I think college football is pretty top heavy, which I think you would feel the same way, which I kind of like it. Kind of like it the way it is right now.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a Georgia or Alabama fan, it's just fine with me. No doubt.
It's great. It's great. And that's what you want to be. Like, you want to have the target on your back as a player, as a program. Like, people don't like you. People want to come in and beat you, whether, you know, you're playing home or on the road or whatever. And that's where you want to be as a program, is at the top. And it's really hard to stay there. But once you get there, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's windy on the mountaintop. I mean, look, it's lonely up there too, which is just fine with me. To that point on Georgia, though, you know, their win total, I think, is 11.5. And that would mean either they're going to go undefeated in the regular season or they lose one game. And here's what I'll just tell all Georgia fans. If they do go undefeated 12-0, that winning streak would date back to the Michigan Orange Bowl. That would be a 29-game win streak. That is almost unprecedented. I'm not saying it's impossible, but what I am saying is later in the season, that is a storyline that's going to get picked up, and the weight of that storyline will permeate through that locker room, and a guy like Kirby is who you want at the helm. Saban's had to deal with it as well. 29 straight wins, buddy. That's tough to do. I'm not saying Georgia can't do it. I'm just saying that is tough to do. Anything to expect for week one? I know I've taken up way too much of your time. This is turning into jury duty for you.
I like it.
Anything to expect from week one? You know, that Sunday night game, LSU Florida State's going to be awesome. Coach Prime, Colorado Buffaloes taking on TCU Saturday at noon.
Okay.
You know, Shedeur Sanders, Travis Hunter, the five-star from Collins Hill High School here in Georgia. They're going to be getting some first Power 5 action. Tennessee takes on Virginia. Monday night, Clemson takes on Duke. And a little ACC action. So anything you got your eyes on?
Is Virginia supposed to be good this year?
Nothing crazy out of the ACC.
Yeah. No. Look, I think obviously the LSU Florida State game is the biggest.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'll go back to Alabama. I'm excited to see our team, like what we look like. Lost a couple close games last year, but when you get your back against the wall as a player, it's like, all right, let's come out swinging. Let's form a new
identity. Yeah.
Let's go out here. Be physical and be fast. So. There's some great games. There's some not so great games, but I'll be watching football from College Game Day to that Hawaii or Pac-12 game finishes at the end.
Well, what about Thursday night? I forgot about this one. Florida travels to Utah, and the reports were that Florida actually left today to get out of Gainesville before the hurricane. I think they're staying in Texas tonight, and then they'll go to Salt Lake tomorrow. So a little bit of a mix-up, a lot of question marks around the Gators. Will or will not Cam Rising, Utah's quarterback, play? That's the big question right now. But Utah, I mean, they won the Pac-12 last year. That'll be a great game to watch on Thursday night.
No, I agree. I forgot about that one. And I think you're right. Look, it's a little different, right? You've got a fly to Texas, touchdown, have a practice. Oh, as a college student, you're probably loving it. You get to miss class.
Oh, yeah.
A little more like back. You can kind of focus on football. You don't have to worry about anything else. It is nice to always get away. You don't have to worry about your girlfriend and what she's doing and how Rush is going or whatever. Like, you can just focus on football. So I think obviously traveling is not the best. But I don't know. Florida, look, Napier, I know he's got some talent too, but that's a big game. Like, another inflection point of the season. Florida, who are you going to be? What are they going to look like? Utah, going on the road, long trip, multiple stops. You know, get your Marriott points ready to go.
Yeah, figure out what's going on there.
Put your number out there, because you're going to spend some time in the hotel.
No question about it. I'm fired up. It's Labor Day weekend. College football action Thursday through Monday. No better place to be than on your couch with a cold beverage, maybe some barbecue, maybe some hot wings. I don't know, but it's going to be fantastic. John Parker Wilson, thank you so much for joining us. Before I sign us out properly, I do want to mention one more time that this episode of Punt and Pass was presented to you by our awesome friends at Solomon Brothers Jewelers. Solomon Brothers has the biggest selection, the best quality, the lowest prices, and an in-store experience that is totally unmatched. You can go to either of them. One is in Alpharetta, just past the Avalon in North Metro Atlanta. The other, right in the heart of the action, 17th floor, Tower Place, the largest diamond and jewelry inventory in the Southeast. The store is for anyone with any budget. And if you mention Punt and Pass or myself or Jake, you can get 10% off your jewelry purchase. Check them out on social media at Solomon Brothers, SolomonBrothers.com. John Parker Wilson at JP Wilson 14 on the social medias. Your college football Saturdays have freed up. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to join us here on Punt and Pass. Anything on the way out, my man?
I guess we'll have to do this again first week in December, I hope. So we'll maybe see in person. Hey, we'll come over to Atlanta. We'll get a golf match on Friday, maybe the late Friday night podcast, and then we'll we'll go to the Mercedes-Benz Dome or whatever you guys are calling it now on Saturday.
I call it the Mercedes-Benz Country Club, because if you go there on a Sunday for a Falcons game, buddy, it's a snoozer. There is nothing more laid back than that place. But it's different on SEC Championship weekend. Maybe you and I can sniff out a nice little steakhouse, martini, glass of red, big old – what are you, a ribeye guy, a filet guy? What do you do?
I'm more of a ribeye. More of a ribeye guy.
Yeah, me too.
My wife likes the flake. I'm more of a ribeye guy, though.
All right.
There's plenty of good steakhouses in Atlanta that we can hit up.
There is no doubt about that. Follow us on social media at Punt and Pass on Twitter and Instagram, puntandpass.com. I'm at Drew Butler, and we will talk to you on Thursday. See ya.